And I suppose one of the things that we find as much as anything is that we find that our hearing begins to go a little bit. There are occasions when we realize that people just mumble a whole lot more than they used to. Now, back in our youth, they spoke clearly, but as we get older, we have a hard time understanding them. And that's just one of those things. Solomon tells us that we've got to get used to that. That as far as our physical body is concerned, it's going to go down and there are things that just won't work right anymore. And while that's natural for us physically, this morning I want us to consider that it is not a natural thing spiritually speaking. As we consider our hearing, while our physical hearing may become labored, while it may be difficult to understand the way we once did, when it comes to spiritual things, we cannot allow that to happen. Now, when we talk about our spiritual hearing, it's got to be as sharp and crisp and clear as it ever was. This morning, I want to talk with you about this idea of hearing problems when it comes to spiritual matters. I want us to talk about a couple of things this morning that can get in our way and can cause us to somewhat stop up our ears and not hear the way that perhaps we ought to. And as we think about these things, I want us to consider what we must do to make sure these things don't happen to us. I suppose when it comes to spiritual hearing problems, one of the things that many times gets in our way is just a stubborn attitude. As I think about this point, I think about children. You ever tried to convince a small child of something that he or she doesn't believe? You labor and you work and you try to convince this child that what he or she has accepted is just not correct. And whatever that is, most likely you are not going to change that child's mind. Once he's made up his mind, no matter how many good reasons you might give, it's going to be very difficult to change that. I'm afraid sometimes that happens to us. Sometimes as we think about spiritual things, there are occasions where we just simply refuse to listen. Somebody may be giving us excellent reasons, somebody may be convincing us with very sound arguments, but in our stubbornness, we've just closed up our ears and we've just simply said, I'm not going to listen to what you have to say. That's nothing new. As we look throughout the Bible, there are many occasions that God has recorded for us where we find people doing that very thing. I want to look very briefly with you at one instance in the nation of Israel's history. There's so many that we could go to. But I want us to look back to Jeremiah chapter 42. And while you're turning there, I'll just very quickly set up the situation here. Judah's just been carried into captivity. The Babylonians have come in, they've taken them away, and there's just a very small remnant left within the land of Judah. And they have come to Jeremiah, and I guess the words that Jeremiah has wanted to hear for a very long time, they say to him. And that's what we find here in chapter 42, verses 1 down through 3. Verse 1 introduces us to these people, the remnant that's left, along with their commanders. Johanan is there, Jezaniah is there. People from the least to the greatest came near. Verse 2, and they said to Jeremiah the prophet, let our plea for mercy come before you, and pray to the Lord your God for us, for all this remnant, because we are left with but a few, as your eyes see us, that the Lord your God may show us the way we should go and the thing we should do. Their fellow citizens have been carried off to captivity. Here they are left in the land of Judah. Jeremiah has been prophesying for years and years for them to turn and to listen to God. This remnant comes to him and says, Jeremiah, pray for us. We want to know what the message of God is. And as I said, you can imagine that Jeremiah would have been elated by this. This is what he had been wanting to hear for years. However, things were not as good as they might have been. Jeremiah prays for them and God gives him an answer. God tells him. Skip on down with me to verse 10. As they come back to hear this, listen to what Jeremiah tells them. He says, if you will remain in this land, then I will build you up and not pull you down. I will plant you and not pluck you up, for I relent of the disaster that I did to you. Do not fear the king of Babylon, of whom you are afraid. Do not fear him, declares the Lord, for I am with you to save you and to deliver you from his hand. I will grant you mercy, that he may have mercy on you and let you remain in your own land. They ask for the answer. God said, here is my answer. Stay put. Don't go to the land of Egypt. Don't go anywhere else. Stay right here in your land, and I'll work it so that the king of Babylon can take care of you. Now, does that end the discussion? Well, it should have. God has given them the answer. They should have listened to that answer. However, that was not the answer that they wanted. And so as we look down in verse 1 of chapter 43, it says, when Jeremiah finished speaking to all the people, all these words of the Lord their God, which the Lord their God had sent him to them, Azariah the son of Josiah and Johanan the son of Kareah and all the insolent men said to Jeremiah, "You are telling a lie. The Lord our God did not send you to say, 'Do not go to Egypt to live there,' but Barak the son of Neriah has set you against us to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they may kill us or take us into exile in Babylon." Now, did you follow that? What's going on? They ask for the message of God. They said, "We'll listen, Jeremiah." God gives Jeremiah the message, and God says, "Stay put." And when the people hear this message, they say, "Forget it. That's not what we wanted to hear. We want to go to the land of Egypt." And they accuse Jeremiah's scribe here of kind of plotting against them. Now look at what happened. Here they had an answer in their mind already. They already knew what they wanted to do. All they wanted God to do is to give them the green light, to tell them it's okay to go. And when God didn't do that, they said, "We will do what we want to do anyway." And off they go into the land of Egypt. That's an example that this problem of stubbornness has always been with us. Israel, in old times, refused to listen. We know as well that when Christ came, He encountered this problem as well. That there were many times that He would tell people what they needed to do, but because of the condition of their heart, they had already made their decision. They were not going to listen. In fact, much of the parable that we just had read to us deals with this. It talks about a refusal or an unwillingness to listen to God. We think about one verse in particular from that as we look to verse 19. Christ said, "When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is what was sown along the path." So He talks about that wayside ground, and He says the problem they have is that they hear My word, but they do not understand it. And because they do not understand it, they're taken away. The devil takes them to his side. Why is that? Well, we heard read as well why that is. As we back up just a few verses from that, going back to verses 14 and 15, here Jesus quoting, He says, "You will indeed hear but never understand, and you will indeed see but never perceive." Listen to this. "For the people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and turn, and I would heal them." Quoting Isaiah, He says the same problems that plagued Israel plague you. You just won't listen. You won't open up your ears. You won't hear the things that I have for you to say. Because of that, Christ says, you will be taken to the enemy's side. Now, as we look at these examples, and so many others we could look at as well, I want us to come to the conclusion that you and I have got to avoid this attitude. That when it comes to listening to spiritual things, that we are going to do this. And by your presence here this morning, I'm pretty well assured that you have not closed your ears up to the things of God. But yet, even for Christians, even for faithful Christians, there is a temptation for us, if something goes contrary to what we might think, that we don't listen. Now think about the people who stoned Stephen. Have you ever thought about what's said about them? As they were stoning him, it says they cried out with a loud voice and stopped their ears and rushed together at him. Physically, literally, they stopped up their ears so they would not hear the message that Stephen had for them. The message of salvation for them. Because of that, they were lost. We must be careful. We've got to beware lest in our stubbornness at times we just simply refuse to listen to something that's been said to us. I would say something else that occasionally can cause us to have hearing problems. might be simply what we're going to categorize as long-held beliefs. I remember a few years ago, I was sitting in my study working on something, and at that time, the house we were in joined the room where the TV was. And so I was sitting in there trying to get some work done, and Alabama was playing football that day. And Ethan and Isaiah, I believe, were sitting in front of the TV, and every time something big happened, I'd hear a whoop and a yell and just excitement. I just kind of sat back and started thinking. At that time, they were quite young. And I said, why are they Alabama fans? Why is it that they're excited about this school scoring a touchdown? And as I thought about that, I realized it's because I'm an Alabama fan. And I guess wanting to avoid the work at hand, I just kept thinking and said, why am I an Alabama fan? Didn't go there. You know, if I was going to root for anybody, it ought to be UNA. That's where I graduated. That's where my degree is from. And why am I an Alabama fan? And I took it a generation back. My father was an Alabama fan. And just recently, I guess within the past month, I heard my father say one of his favorite childhood memories was sitting around the radio with his grandmother, who was a big Alabama fan, listening to the game. Now, why did that pass down through the generations? It's because many times when we live our lives with an idea, or we live our lives with a concept, it becomes us, doesn't it? It becomes who we are. And it doesn't so much matter that we didn't go to a school or that we've not set foot on a campus or whatever. It's just our tradition. It's just the way we've always done things. And traditions can be good things. There are things that I enjoy that my family has always done that I want to impart to my children. Sometimes, however, we've got to be very wary of that when it comes to spiritual things. Now, there are good spiritual traditions. I don't want to dispute that for a minute. There are good things that we do by way of tradition. However, when we think about that, there is occasionally the temptation not to listen to a message because it is not consistent with our lifelong beliefs. Now, if you told me I needed to root for another school, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. That's my tradition. That's all right when it comes to football. That's all right when it comes to sports. That's all right when it comes to a lot of things. But when it comes to Bible things, I cannot close up my ears and say, well, because I've never heard that. Because that is not my traditional belief. I'm just simply not going to listen to it. We know that Jesus dealt with that as well. When He was dealing with the Pharisees, He was dealing with a group of people who said that. You are coming to us with something new, with something we don't know, with something we don't like. Therefore, we are not going to listen to that. We think about what Jesus says in Mark chapter 7, verses 7 and 8. He says, "This people honors Me with their lips, but their heart is far from Me. In vain do they worship Me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You leave the commandment of God and hold to the tradition of men." Quoting from the Old Testament. What's He saying? He's saying, I have brought you a message, but you will not listen to it. You say you honor God, but your heart is far from Him. Many times we're very critical of the Pharisees, and we ought to be. Christ was critical of them, therefore we have a standard for that. However, I want you to consider them for just a minute. What Jesus was asking them to do was to accept something that was contrary to their heritage. Now, should it have been contrary? No. They should have understood the prophets. They should have been looking for Christ. The signs given in His life were indicative that He was the Messiah. But they had not been brought up in that vein. They had been brought up looking for a Messiah who was going to ride in on His proverbial white horse. And He was going to save them from the hands of their oppressors. That's who they were looking for. And here comes this meek carpenter son who says, I am the Messiah. And they say, we refuse to accept that. We refuse to listen because it contradicted their traditional belief about who the Messiah should be. What happens when you and I are faced with something new? What happens when you and I are confronted with something different? Here we are, perhaps like the Pharisees. Someone comes in and tells us something that is very, very different from what my mother and daddy and grandmother and granddaddy taught me. How do I react to that? What do I do? Well, I would suggest to us that the first thing we do is we neither accept nor reject because it's new. There are people we've talked about who reject anything new as far as their belief system. We'll also have to look at the other side just briefly. There's people who will accept most anything because it's new. Something big comes along and somebody says, yeah, I like that. And, you know, they're just kind of like that boat tossed on the sea, just drifting from shore to shore in different ideas. I neither accept nor reject anything because it's new to my beliefs. What does that cause me to do? Well, if I hear that and I find that it's wrong, if there's somebody who is just wrong and they're bringing this message to me, and I can go to my Bible and I can prove it wrong, well, that may very well call on me to bring teaching to that person, to help that person to understand that what he is teaching me is incorrect. I think about Aquila and Priscilla. Apollos, very great man who was a good speaker, we're told, knew only the baptism of John. And so what do we find in Acts? Let me get this verse, then we'll get to that. Let me bring attention, first of all, to Acts 17:11. What did the Jews do? It said they were more noble than those in Thessalonica. They received the word with all eagerness, examining the Scriptures daily to see if these things were so. There's our standard. There's the ones who neither accepted nor rejected because it was new. Now, what I was saying about Apollos, it may call on us to correct someone if they bring an error to us. Now consider what Aquila and Priscilla told him. It says, he, Apollos, began to speak boldly in the synagogue, but when Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they took him and explained to him the way of God more accurately. Now they were like the Jews we just read about. They listened to what he had to say, but then they compared it to what they knew to be correct. They compared it by the standard. And when they compared it by the standard, they said to Apollos, you're wrong. They took him aside. They explained to him the ways of God more accurately. And he accepted that. He accepted the things that they had to say. So there are times when new things are brought to me spiritually that are just not right. And I don't go flying off after them because everybody else is. However, there may as well be times when I need to change something. When despite the fact that I've believed something all my life, somebody can come to me and in black and white show me I'm wrong. They can say, here is what you're doing, here is what you're accepting, here's what you're preaching, here's what you're teaching, and it's wrong by the standard of God. Now what do I do on occasion like that? Here's our temptation. Do I stop up my ears? Do I say, I've always believed this? I've been taught this way all my life. Every preacher at my church has preached it this way. Or do I say, I need to study a little bit more? I need to find out if I'm right or wrong on this particular idea. Let me note with you very briefly what I think is just a tremendous example of this. Back in the book of Nehemiah. Going back to the book of Nehemiah, we know that he many times was called upon to fight things that the people were doing wrong. You read the book of Nehemiah and you find just a man who is constantly having to deal with problems. But on this occasion, something good's happening. People are doing better. They're doing the will of God. And as we look to chapter 8, we find that they come across in their readings of the law something they were supposed to do. Looking on down to verse 14 of chapter 8, it says, they found it was written in the law that the Lord had commanded by Moses that the people of Israel should dwell in booths during the feast of the seventh month, and that they should proclaim it and publish it in all their towns and in Jerusalem, go out to the hills and bring branches of olive, wild olive, myrtle, palm, and other leafy trees and make booths as it is written. Consider this for a minute. God had established this feast for them to keep, where they would go out and build these little brush arbors. They would build these little tents, and there they were going to live. They'd basically move out of their house, and they would live in these little tents, these little booths, as a commemorative of the time that their fathers had to live like this. Look at verse 16. It says, so the people went out and brought them and made booths for themselves, each on his roof, and in their courts and in the courts of the house of God, and in the square of the water gate, and in the square of the gate of Ephraim, And all the assembly of those who had returned from the captivity made booths and lived in the booths. For from the days of Joshua the son of Nun to that day, the people of Israel had not done so. And there was very great rejoicing. Consider what we read in the last part of verse 16. They hadn't done it right since the days of Joshua. And here we are in the return from the captivity. Now I want you to consider who's lived during those years that they weren't doing it right. You had some of the faithful judges. Othniel, Ehud, Deborah, Gideon. A number of faithful judges. Samson, Eli, Samuel. Who else did you have? You then go to the divided kingdom. You had David who was righteous. You had Solomon who part of his life was righteous. Then you go to the divided kingdom and you had good kings like Asa and Hezekiah and Josiah. Seems to me they hadn't done it right. Despite the fact that they had had good leaders, despite the fact that they had had people who were teaching them correctly on other things. Now what could these folks have done? They could have said, David never did it this way. I mean, look back, David, during his time, that was our glorious history. That was a time when we had a man after God's own heart ruling us. He didn't do it right. People in his day didn't do it right. They didn't do it that way. Why should we? They didn't have that attitude. They said, if it's in the law, we're going to do it. And I would suggest to you that we've got to have that same attitude. That when we consider our beliefs, we've got to have beliefs and maintain them, not because of what we've always done, but because we can find that that's what God would have us to do. And that's hard. Because when you start talking about tradition, when you start talking about changing a belief or changing the way something's done, after it has been done for years and years or believed for years and years, you're going up against a very hard challenge, but that does not excuse us. Sometimes we just simply have to tell someone who gives us grief about that. Here it is in black and white. And if I can find where God has told me to do it, I listen to God. I listen to no one else. We must be careful that we don't have hearing problems because we're allowing lifelong beliefs to keep us from hearing. Finally this morning, I'd like to give you a third problem that sometimes causes us to have problems with our spiritual hearing. And that's the idea of keeping the peace. Probably many of you can sympathize and empathize with me. I've just completed 16 years of teaching and I've sat through a lot of faculty meetings. And I'm sure there are those of you who can relate to that and others in different careers who've had a similar kind of meeting. There are times I just keep my mouth shut now. Back when I was first teaching, I might be very vocal on something and realize nothing's going to change, and realize that to bring this topic up is to bring up a lot of controversy, and that you just need sometimes to sit back and be quiet. And so I've learned that if some new teacher comes in and brings up a topic that I know, just keep my mouth shut. Why? Because sometimes it's a whole lot easier to keep the peace. And sometimes a 3-hour faculty meeting can be avoided and turned into a 30-minute faculty meeting by just being quiet. There's wisdom in that. But that is not the case when we come to spiritual things. It's also very easy for us just to be quiet, just to not listen to anybody else in order to keep things peaceful, in order to not rock the boat. When we consider that, I want us to understand that silence to simply keep the peace is a false concept of peace. Now there may be things. There may be things of a liberty kind of nature that we just don't discuss. We've been through it. Everybody knows everybody else's opinion. It really doesn't impact my spirituality one way or the other. But when it comes to things that congregationally we do, that things that are affecting each and every one of us, if I say, well, I don't agree with that. I don't like the way that's being done. But I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to cause any trouble. I don't want anybody to look at me as a troublemaker. What have I done? I think what I've done is I've kind of had a hearing problem, not only for myself, but for others who may need to hear that message. Now, is there a way to do it correctly? Yes, there is. And perhaps that's a thought for another day. But as we consider the idea of simply stopping up our ears, not listening to something, in order to keep the peace, I think we've got trouble. I'm reminded of what Paul wrote as he wrote to the Thessalonians about false teachers. He says, "For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman. And they will not escape, but you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness." What's the concept of false teaching that he brings out here? He says they will come upon you teaching you peace and security. In other words, he's saying they're going to say everything's okay. Everything's all right. Don't worry about it. I would suggest that that is the principle anyway that we must avoid when it comes to just being quiet or just not listening, just simply to keep the peace. What is true peace? True peace is not in ignoring differences of understanding. That's not true peace. If there are things that you're doing and that you're asking me to do that I have a conscientious objection to, not because of tradition, not because of personal likes and dislikes, but because I can find proof in the Bible where it's incorrect, we need to be talking and listening, don't we? We need to be thinking about those things. When we think about true peace, it comes when we seek the Lord's answer and nobody else's. So what does that mean for us when differences arise? I think James gives us a very good idea to think of. He says, "Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." We don't stop up our ears, we listen. We listen to the things. We may stop up our mouths. We may not react immediately to what we hear. And by all means, we do not let anger preface our discussions. James tells us that we need to think before we speak. That we need to think before something makes us angry. So, how do we deal with disagreements? This morning, with a group this size, I can almost guarantee that we could list probably 10, 20, 30 things that we disagree on. There are probably all manner of things that you and I hold a difference of opinion on concerning the Word of God. What do? Do we stop up our ears and say, "Well, I just want to keep the peace. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to..." No. No, we don't do that. A church that cannot discuss things on which they disagree is a dying church. A church that cannot come together and say, "We're going to put aside differences. We're going to put aside bad attitudes. We're going to put aside life-held beliefs. And we are going to examine it from the Word of God," is not a church following the pattern of Christ. If you cannot do that, there's problems. The thing we've got to realize is this, that when we talk about true peace, when we talk about keeping the peace, our concern must be about keeping the peace that God defines as peace. That's what we want. It's not simply putting things aside, just simply so we don't rock the boat. What about our spiritual hearing? Do we have problems with stubbornness and a refusal to listen? Do we have problems with lifelong beliefs getting in the way of what the truth might be? Do we have problems with a timidity that keeps us from discussing things that may be somewhat controversial? It all boils down to this. It's each of us asking ourselves the question, are we swift to hear? As we listen to these things, are we swift to hear them, to think about them, as the Bereans did, to meditate on them, and then to come to the conclusion that God would have us to conclude? That's what spiritual hearing is all about. And I would encourage every one of us, no matter what our age, whether we are new in the faith, whether we're young chronologically, whether we've been a Christian for 50 years, whatever the case, that we exercise our senses, that we make sure our listening is as good as it ever was, spiritually speaking, and we put on the things that God would have us to put on. Thank you this morning for your good attention to the lesson. Go ahead and get your songbooks out and turn to the number that's been announced. We read that faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. This morning, if you're not a Christian, I want you to listen to what I'm telling you. You need to become one. Not because I tell you to. Not because I tell you it's a good idea, which it is. But because you can read for yourself in the Word of God. And through those pages, you can listen to what God's telling you. That He's saying to you, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. He who repents and confesses of his sins and is baptized for forgiveness of sins will be saved. Listen to what the Lord is telling you, and if you understand that, don't put it off any longer. Maybe you've stopped up your ears to other things. Maybe there's things in your life that are not right. Maybe there's things that you need to correct. If it's something with an individual, do that. If it's something between you and God, do that. If it's something that we can pray with you about, we'll do that as well this morning. Whatever it takes to listen to God's message, but not only listen, to follow. I encourage you to do that this morning, while we stand and as we sing together.